This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today, not interviewing a guest, but providing you with a solo disquisition, that's a big word, on the subject of multiple sclerosis. It's a clinical focus on MS. One of the reasons that I decided to talk about MS is because over the 30 years or so that I've been practicing, I have found MS, while a serious condition, no question that it's not a piece of cake to treat MS, but I have found it one of the most gratifying things to treat in my clinical practice because there is so much that natural therapies with diet and supplements and other measures can achieve with MS patients. And we're continually seeing advances in terms of things that people can do, some of which I'll share with you today. Whenever I see a patient who is initially diagnosed with MS, I rejoice because it's an opportunity to create an intervention that can make a huge difference in that patient's course of disease. More advanced patients who come to us, say, in a wheelchair, very debilitated, it's sometimes hard to reverse the changes, but at the very least, we can slow the deterioration that is going to lead progressively to make patients virtually bedbound. The statistics show that approximately 2.3 million people worldwide suffer from MS. It is a neurological disease that is associated with numbness and tingling, sometimes vision problems, double vision, numbness or weakness of the limbs. Often there's bowel or bladder dysfunction, and there can be spasticity, which causes a lot of pain. It's as if they have a permanent Charlie horse in their muscles. They have difficulty with balance. They're often extremely fatigued, and there's an aspect of MS which is associated with mental changes, depression, which is not surprising because MS involves the brain. It's an autoimmune disease. It involves demyelination, which means a stripping of the coating of the nerves. It's as if the insulation on the wires is being stripped off due to an autoimmune attack. And conventional therapies range from steroids for acute episodes, but long-term steroids are losing proposition. So patients are given interferon or interferon-like drugs, Copaxone, which has mild benefits. So most of these drugs have milder transient benefits. There's no cure. There's also a drug called Tysabri, there's some new work with a drug that I'll talk about, which is a fumarate ester that has just been approved for use in MS, which is kind of interesting because its origins are in nutritional therapy for psoriasis in Europe, particularly in Germany. But these therapies, particularly these immunosuppressive drugs, are associated with side effects. Tysabri can cause a fatal neurological complication. And so we're always looking for natural approaches that can make a difference for patients. So this is a big subject, but let's start with diet, which is an important consideration in MS because the relationship between diet and MS is one of the most carefully studied things in the field of nutrition, because one of the longest studies ever undertaken of the relationship of diet to medical condition was begun in 1949 by Dr. Roy Swank. And there are some patients who have been studied for up to 50 years following the Swank diet. The Swank diet restricts intake of saturated fat, whole milk, cheese, margarine, hydrogenated oils, trans fats are prohibited. Patients are encouraged to eat lots of fish. Patients also received 5 grams per day of cod liver oil, and then they monitored the severity of the disease. And what they found, and this is really a slam dunk, after 34 years of follow-up, they found dramatic reductions in the death rate. The average degree of deterioration of patients was minimal compared to patients who weren't following the diet. There were 15 patients who adhered to the diet for 50 years, and 13 of the 15 after 50 years were still walking around active and normal. Two, however, required some assistance to walk, which is a pretty good track record for multiple sclerosis. Now, this is a little bit old-style science. He did not study in depth, you know, some of the molecular markers of disease that we now have available. It was just a good old-fashioned empirical trial of diet, but it was remarkably effective. Why was it effective? Well, it's a diet that may have eliminated certain allergens, particularly dairy, although there was no specific restriction of gluten, which I'll talk about in a few moments. There was also a lot of omega-3 fatty acids from the fish that was encouraged, and there was basically getting rid of junk fats, trans fats, which you know can gum up the works in the brain. And there was the addition of cod liver oil. Cod liver oil has generous amounts of omega-3 fatty acids, also lots of vitamin D. So, you know, what was it about the Swank diet that made it so beneficial? It is, it's still unclear. But the Swank diet has been supplanted in terms of popularity by the work of Dr. Terry Walls. Now, for those who are not familiar with Terry Walls, I would refer you to a recent podcast that I did with her last month, or earlier this month, depending on when you listen to this. Terry Walls herself is an MS patient, but she's also a physician. She was stricken with MS. She, as a conventional physician, undertook all the conventional modalities, took the drugs. The drugs didn't help, ended up on a very powerful drug, Tysabri, with lots of side effects and very little in the way of benefit, began to research this and decided that a paleo diet was potentially beneficial. And the paleo diet involves avoidance of wheat and dairy, refined foods, sugar, and so-called modern foods. I believe it also restricts legumes in this case. You can get more information at her website about the Walls protocol for MS. It encourages, in contradistinction to the Swank diet, it actually encourages saturated fat from coconut oil, but of course no, very little in the way of, or total elimination of trans fats. And in contradistinction to the Swank diet, he emphasized polyunsaturated vegetable oils. That's not favored on the Walls diet. And the Walls diet, you know, N of one, very, very dramatically effective for Terry Walls. Terry Walls had a remarkable improvement and virtually total remission from debilitating MS. She was about to be consigned to a wheelchair, and now she's out there biking and very active, and certainly active in promoting the diet. And she's actually conducting research at this time And she just received a $1 million grant to undertake a research at the University of Iowa in a trial that over several years will compare the efficacy of the Walls diet versus the Swank diet. Now, that's kind of interesting experimental setup because she's not comparing the Walls diet to just doing nothing, you know, people just eating high in the hog, whatever they want. The goal of that is to see if the Walls diet offers any superiority to the Swank diet, the low saturated fat Swank diet. And my prediction and my preference in working with patients now with MS is to put them on a paleo diet for autoimmunity. I think the paleo diet offers tremendous benefits for patients with many autoimmune conditions, whether it be rheumatoid arthritis or Hashimoto's thyroiditis, whether it be lupus-like syndromes, scleroderma, Sjogren's syndrome. We've seen real benefits with that type of dietary approach, not necessarily restricting saturated fat, but giving patients an oil change to healthier fats away from the harmful fats that were so much part of the American diet. Okay, now let's pause for a brief message from one of our sponsors. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, an effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally, and it's so effective it works for 9 in 10 people. The Zona Plus is a high-tech smart device that guides you through a patented therapy that's personalized to your unique physiology. To find out more, go to tryzona.com. or call toll-free 888-408-6141. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, you can get $50 off and free shipping. Just use the coupon code HOFFMAN at checkout at tryzona.com. Thanks for listening to that message. And now back to our discussion of integrative therapies for multiple sclerosis. As to the gluten connection, gluten is often associated with autoimmunity, and it's routine in our office to ask patients with autoimmune disorders to get rid of wheat and related grains. But I came across a specific study looking at the relationship between gluten sensitivity and multiple sclerosis entitled Gluten Sensitivity in MS, Experimental Myth or Clinical Truth. It's in the Annals of New York Academy of Sciences. And what they say here is that patients with neurological disease of unknown etiology sometimes present with anti-gliadin and anti-tissue transglutaminase antibodies, which indicate an immunological reaction to dietary gluten. And so they looked at 98 patients with MS, and they found a highly significant increase in the titers of IgG antibodies against gliadin and tissue transglutaminase in the MS patients. Now, of the 98, only 7 patients had positive IgG anti-gliadin antibodies, but only 2 control patients had positive antibodies. So by no means a very high number or large majority had bona fide evidence of gluten intolerance, but there was a significant increment in the reactivity of patients with MS to gluten. And what they say is that, quote, a gluten-free diet should be considered in specific cases of patients who present with gluten antibodies. I think that those antibodies aren't even that sensitive, and it is possible in some patients to have a potential neurological damage without even the antibodies being significantly positive. So it's worth the trial of gluten elimination at the very least, if not a paleo diet. Before we get to specific supplements and specific therapies for MS, I want to give voice to the view that certain environmental factors may contribute to the risk of MS. We don't exactly know what causes MS. It's an autoimmune condition. It may begin in the gut. It may be triggered by food intolerances. It may be triggered by viruses. But there are some studies that suggest that exposure to organic solvents is associated with an increased risk of developing MS. And so the suggestion is that patients with MS should reduce their burden of exposure to toxic chemicals. That's a good idea anyway. And perhaps undertake a detoxification program with sauna or with infrared in order to sweat out the toxins. In addition, there's a lot of literature about the relationship between mercury and MS. And so many MS patients are urged to get their fillings out, certainly to avoid high mercury fish, perhaps to undertake chelation therapy. That remains controversial. There are some people who dispute that fact. Also, you know, whether it's a good idea to begin chelation or mercury amalgam removal, which has the potential for redistributing some of the mercury, which may be lying dormant in the body, that too is controversial. But there are some similarities between the symptoms of mercury toxicity and MS. Another masquerader is Lyme disease. Lyme disease can cause all kinds of neurological problems. And so it's been suggested that some cases, at the very least, of MS are Lyme disease in disguise. And so that creates a real therapeutic dilemma because what may happen is it's unclear whether a person has active Lyme disease by the basic criteria of Lyme disease, but they have certain antibodies positive using selective tests that may not be acknowledged as the gold standard for Lyme disease testing. And then patients may undergo extensive antibiotic treatment in an effort to cure their MS. There's an article that I came up with under Medical Hypotheses from 2005. Chronic Lyme borreliosis is at the root of multiple sclerosis. Is a cure with antibiotics attainable? And so what they say here is that, interestingly, one of the treatments for Lyme disease, which is tetracycline or doxycycline, actually has anti-inflammatory effects. And so it may be that a person who is receiving doxycycline or tetracycline for their Lyme disease may say they feel better, but it's not entirely clear that it's because they're killing off the organisms that cause Lyme disease. They may get an anti-inflammatory effect from the antibiotics themselves. So they say a randomized prospective double-blind trial is necessary in patients from Lyme disease endemic areas with established MS to yield reasonable significance within due time. The groups must be large enough and preferably taken together in a multi-center study to determine if indeed antibiotics can be a cure for some patients with MS who have a high suspicion for underlying Lyme disease. This is, again, one of these dilemmas in integrative medicine or in, shall we say, progressive Lyme treatment, where we wonder if we're doing the patient a service or a disservice by intensively treating them with antibiotics for a condition that may or may not be at the root of their MS. Another controversial therapy for MS that has enjoyed some popularity is surgery for something that's dubbed chronic cerebrospinal venous insufficiency, or CCSVI, which is a narrowing of veins that causes improper blood flow from the brain. It's as if blood flow backs up, and through a surgery that kind of deobstructs the blood flow, patients improve in terms of their MS symptoms. And some patients rave, some say it's beneficial. Their doctors are still advocates of it, but a study just came out. A new Canadian study has concluded that a procedure to open narrowed veins in the neck and chest is ineffective in relieving the symptoms of MS and works no better than a placebo treatment. They say, however, that there are some neurologists and MS patients who say that the treatment worked and want to continue research on this. I got to say that I'm a little dubious as to whether this form of radical treatment for MS is worthwhile. The study authors conclude their findings represent, quote, the most definitive debunking of the so-called, quote, liberation procedure. This originated by Italian physician Dr. Paolo Zamboni. Isn't Zamboni one of those things that they use on in hockey to make the ice rink smooth? He published a study showing that venoplasty helped some patients with MS who he had a condition that he dubbed CCVSVI, a narrowing of the veins that causes improper blood flow. Okay, let's start talking about specific nutrients and supplements for MS, where I think there's a lot of promise. There are quite a few of them, so I'll start with vitamin D. And the clue as to the potential efficacy of vitamin D in MS comes through studies which show that the prevalence of MS, the epidemiology of MS, is very distinctly skewed towards high northern and high southern latitudes. In other words, you get more patients in New Zealand and Canada and northern Europe and the northern states of the United States, continental United States, than you will in, say, Ecuador. And the reasons for that may be manifold, but one fact is that there's a lot less sun exposure at the extremes of latitude. And so what does vitamin D do? Or what does sunlight do? Vitamin D production is triggered in the epidermal cells of the skin by ultraviolet exposure. And so this has led to trials of vitamin D in the treatment of MS. So last year, physicians at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine reported that taking a high dose of vitamin D is safe for people with MS and may help regulate the body's hyperactive immune response. This is a pilot study that was done in 2016. In the study, 40 people with relapsing or remitting MS received either 10,400 international units, that's a super high dose, or 800 international units of vitamin D3 daily for 6 months. And what they found was that it was safe. None of the patients had problems. They didn't have calcium kidney stones or any of the complications associated with high dose vitamin D. The people taking the high dose had a reduction in inflammatory T cells related to MS severity. They did not track clinical response of the patients. They didn't say that fewer patients were in wheelchairs or that they had better mobility, but they found that the markers of inflammation were lowered. And we do know that vitamin D has an immunoregulatory effect, which is a two-edged sword. It's been shown that vitamin D enhances immunity to respiratory infections. In a recent study, people had less respiratory infections when they had more vitamin D. And there's some studies showing that vitamin D attenuates the severity of the flu, for example. But also vitamin D curbs autoimmune reactions. So it turns down the volume on the part of the immune system that is the responsible for autoimmune disorders. And there's some studies that have looked at very high doses of vitamin D while monitoring patients, as much as 20,000 or 40,000 daily. That would be a little bit scary, would have to be monitored by a physician. I recall one study looked at 14,000 with good results. So high-dose vitamin D is a real mainstay. And again, it goes back to the Swank study. They took cod liver oil. It's hard to establish how much vitamin D was in that cod liver oil that they took for 30 or 40, 50 years, but that was an ingredient, perhaps, in their success. Let's talk briefly about vitamin B12. Vitamin B12 is a logical candidate for patients with MS because patients who are deficient in vitamin B12 have neurological symptoms. So it's certainly important to make sure that it's not a vitamin B12 deficiency. You can actually get paresthesias, numbness, and tingling from B12 deficiency. So might it stand to reason that supplementing B12 could help patients with MS? We know that that B12 plays a role in the synthesis and integrity of myelin. And there's a tendency in some studies to note that patients with MS have lower levels of vitamin B12. But does that conversely mean that high-dose B12 can alleviate the symptoms of MS? And the trials on this are not that definitive. Some patients report more energy, less in the way of symptoms. But in some studies, no neurological improvements were seen after oral administration of B12. What I prefer is vitamin B12 injections, specifically of methylcobalamin. I think that they're safe, relatively cheap. And so I would urge that, especially a newly diagnosed patient with MS, undertake a trial of B12 shots, perhaps weekly for a month or two, and then on a monthly basis to see if that creates some improvement. We're going to pause now because we divided the podcast into two parts, but we got lots more to cover. We're going to cover some of the important supplements that can be supportive, that have evidence behind them for MS patients. And we'll talk about some of the innovative therapies. We'll talk about treating the gut. We'll talk about cannabidiol, a derivative of marijuana, and low-dose naltrexone. And we'll touch on bee venom therapy when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Our clinical focus today is multiple sclerosis, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.